This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name's Mark Pacey from the Wired Up Archive. Today we've got three more historical stories to go through with you. And straight into it. Fire was a real menace in the days of wooden buildings, and sometimes the flames would take the very places that reported on them. In the early hours of October 18, 1927, a fire broke out in Carterton. The fire was first reported at 1:55 a.m. and by 2:30 a.m, an extensive glare was visible to the south. This quote was printed in the local newspapers, all bar one. The Wairarapa Daily News did not report on the fire, the reason being this was the source of the blaze. There was some argument as to where the fire originated, but the Wairarapa Age reported it started in the offices of the Wairarapa Daily News. At the time of the fire, there were several newspapers operating in the region. Wairarapa Daily Times also provided details on the blaze. While there was uncertainty as to the origins of the fire, it didn't matter in the end, as the fire spread to the neighbouring buildings. A strong wind was blowing, which was the last thing the building's occupiers wanted. Soon there were three buildings on fire, one of them containing two families. One of the children was awakened by a noise and went to investigate. Upon finding the building on fire, they aroused the family and the other occupants, and they were able to scramble to safety. The fire brigade arrived and were faced with an impossible task. The fire was well established, and the buildings were old and dry. It was unbearable to stand even near the blaze due to the heat from the inferno. The brigade had to give up on saving the three buildings that were already aflame and turned to save the neighbouring buildings. The fire did manage to spread across the road, but this was brought under control. The three buildings that were aflame continued to burn. One of them, a motor garage, was particularly difficult to control given the types of material stored there. One fire brigade member was badly burned from burning oil when trying to control the blaze there. Other members of the brigade also suffered burns while they battled off the fire. Wells were emptied and other sources of water had to be found while they were replenished. While the fire was contained and the other buildings in the area were saved, the original victims of the fire were left to burn. Soon they were just smouldering ruins, the flames having claimed every burnable scrap of them. Once the inferno settled down to the glowing embers, the realisation set in. The families that had escaped only with their clothes they were wearing, all their furniture, their personal effects were reduced to ashes. The garage had three cars stored in it at the time. None were insured, and the payout for the garage of the building, we'll run with that, negligible. It had taken the fire brigade until well into the afternoon to bring the blaze under control. A fire burning for that long consumed everything it touched. The Wairarapa Daily News building was a total loss. The newspaper had just wrapped up working on a catalogue for the Wairarapa Jubilee show, with staff working until midnight to get the job done. Now the organisers had the unenviable task of rewriting the catalogue. Now all that could be seen were the blistered metal presses amidst the ruins of the building that once housed them. In a show of camaraderie, the Wairarapa Age and the Wairarapa Daily News... No, let's do that one again. In a show of camaraderie, the Wairarapa Age said the Wairarapa Daily News could use their presses, meaning the paper could still rise from the ashes and keep their readers up to date with the news of the region. In 1940, it was announced that after 34 years of operation, the Wairarapa Daily News would cease operation. All right. Now, last week, we worked out a really clever way of how we were going to do the music. We're going to pick one of each of my favourite movies, do a little bit of a talk on each of them, and play two songs from that movie and one piece of sort of the score from that movie. We had some technical difficulties last week, so that didn't happen. But I also struggled to find two songs from said movie. I have since rewatched that movie a couple of times, and the song that I was going to play that Google told me, yep, this is in the soundtrack, I couldn't hear it. So we've changed it slightly. We are still going to do that next, but right now we're doing something different. It's somebody's birthday today, so as a tribute, we're going to play one of their favourite songs. This is Here Comes the Sun from the Beatles, because, Michael, the world would be a lot darker without you in it. You are a ray of sunshine. Happy birthday.
comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right.
Here Comes the Sun from the Beatles, going out to Michael. Right, a second story for today. In July of 1973, Ethel Bentley was doing some work on his farm when he found something. There amongst the dirt was something shiny. Uncovering more of it, it turned out to be a glass bottle. This is not the most unusual thing to find, but this one was different. It was a rectangular medicine bottle, and on one side, it had the words embossed in the glass, T.F. Valentine, Chemist, Martinborough. This was not a common find, and even now, 50 years later, there are still only a handful of Valentine bottles that have ever been discovered. Realising its significance, Bentley passed it on to the current Martinborough chemist, Leslie Wright. Wrote some research and said that Valentine was the chemist in Martinborough from 1884 to 1898. The Cyclopedia of New Zealand from 1897, Valentine's entry is short and to the point. And this is a quote. As this is the only business of its kind in the district around Martinborough, Mr. Valentine naturally gets all the trade. He is also a herbalist and a newsagent. This is where things get a bit strange. Wright said that Valentine had started business in 1884, but Valentine was born in 1871. So that can't have been in business in 1884. We know he was working as a chemist in 1897, but checking the register of pharmaceutical chemists in 1900, he didn't become qualified until February 27, 1899. This all becomes straightened out when we look at the Stones Directory of 1896-1897. Under Valentine's name, his occupation is listed as newsagent and herbalist. By law, you had to be registered to work as a chemist, and to become registered, you had to pass both a written and practical exam. In 1897, Valentine was not qualified, so was not a chemist. This shows the cyclopedia entries are all a bit embellished.
These were paid entries, so the subjects submitted their own biographies. So whereas Valentine submitted a still rather short but very complimentary entry on his business and the add-on, he is also a herbalist and newsagent, in reality he was only a herbalist and newsagent. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he was still some years off becoming a bona fide chemist. Valentine worked in Martinborough until 1908, when he sold his business to Charles Poulter. He then went on to Auckland. In 1928, he wrote a letter to the editor with some quite profound words, and something that people should have paid far more attention to. It would be many decades until the words of Valentine would be taken seriously. "Let us face facts. Smoking is injurious to all young people, undermining health and form a most undesirable and expensive habit. There are some people who, as he says, live to a great age and have smoked all their lives, granted. But what of their offspring? Smoker's heart, smoker's cancer, neurasthenia, are all born that way. The present generation are paying heavily enough for the sins of their fathers." Poulter's pharmacy ran until 1958, when it was sold to Peter Price. This was a short venture, with Alfred Lacey taking over in 1960. By 1963, it had changed hands again, this time to Wright, who had the pharmacy under his name in 1966, when the name was changed to the Martinborough Pharmacy, a name that still exists today. This is one of the few pharmacies where there is a direct line can be traced all the way back to the first pharmacy in town, which in this case was started by a herbalist and a newsagent. There you go. So now we're going to do the movie things, just because this one was too difficult. The next ones will be much easier. So, as I may have mentioned 30 or 40 times, I've spent the winter writing my big book that I've always wanted to write, that I decided I would do 8 years ago. I finally finished writing it last week. It doesn't mean I'm done. I've still got the editing and the proofing and all the rest of that to go, but let's just put that aside for now. The writing is finished. One of my go-to things that I do when I'm writing is I have music in the background, or I have one of three movies just playing, you know, over and over in the background, just because it's something familiar, you're not going to get distracted. This is from one of those movies, well, the main movie that I have playing in the background. It's the movie I would have been in the room with that has played the most of any movie. So like I said, I don't watch them, but they're just a little bit of background comfort there. So this is from the 1989 film Dead Poets Society, directed by Peter Weir, starring Robin Williams and a very young Ethan Hawke, if you want to see that. So this is the one piece of music that I know for sure is in this movie. It's a third the way through when these two of the students build an illegal radio and finally tap into the radio waves and play a song. This is the song that plays. So this is Jessie Mae Robinson, "Let's Have Arty."
And that was Let's Have a Party by Jesse May Robinson. So that's partway through, and Mr. Pitts and Mr. Meeks have made their illegal radio. It's an excellent movie. If you haven't seen it, I'd recommend checking it out. It's quite inspirational and quite a different role for Robin Williams. He holds back. Either that or they cut the scenes where he didn't. Either way, fantastic movie. Cannot recommend it enough. Okay, last story already. Typing today is quite forgiving. You can undo mistakes instantly, and programs will let you know when they think you have made a mistake. But it was not always like this. Before the personal computer took hold and became popular, in the later 1990s, word processing was a very different process. Control Z did nothing. There was no control. If you made a mistake, you could try to manually apply whiteout to your page and then type over it, or you could start over. If you were bad at spelling or grammar and you didn't consult your dictionary, it would be printed for all to see. Typewriters were pretty basic tools and required some skill. For a start, there was the gentle pressing of today's keyboards would have no effect. Each key had to be pressed with some force to make the letter bar rise and strike the page. You even had to manually move the paper up to the next line. The electric typewriter was a step in the direction of the modern word processing, with a whiteout feature, and no longer required as much force to press down on the keys. But, there's no button there. If you went to school before the mid-1990s, this was what you learnt on. Typing at this time was a real skill, and being able to type at speed with precision was a key aptitude of working in an office. Schools and other organisations offered typing classes to bring people up to speed. A class in 1985 held in the Community Action Program had would-be typists pounding the keyboard of a typewriter for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for the past 12 weeks. As the Time Days reported at the time, the best in the class were able to type out 90 words per minute. Quite a feat for the technology at the time and very impressive to do without making some horrendous mistakes. While there were those that took typing seriously, there were others of us that maybe should have paid more attention in class. Typewriters are an essential tool in the office and the publishing environment. And if you would think those that took up these professions would have been sensible and mature when they started to learn to type in school. A certain historian who shall not be named may have been amongst those finding mischievous things to do with a typewriter instead of paying his full attention to what the teacher was trying to explain. To this day, home keys are an enigma, but I can still recall which heavy metal bands I managed to save into the electric typewriter's tiny memory. Actually, that's just admitting that it was me. The person put them in the memory. There we go, I'm going to change that. When older writers say that typing is an art, this is no exaggeration. In 1939, Julius Nelson from the University of Baltimore took this to the extreme and published a book called Art Typing. This was shown to me in the archive by regular Cheryl Hutana, and it's quite a remarkable publication. Starting simple, the book progresses, in which the typist can create genuine art with just a typewriter. When you think that this was done without digital technology, where one mistake would ruin the piece, each typed work is worthy of being framed and admired. From grandfather clocks to Shirley Temple, this art typing is truly remarkable. The younger ones out there who use computers to type up their work certainly have some skills, but could they do it the old way and type up a page of text with no mistakes and perfect grammar? Create a work of art with nothing but the characters that appear on a basic typewriter. If you can find an old typewriter that is still functioning, then it is well worth the challenge to see how us older typists had to do it. Okay, so again, so keeping in with the theme of the movie, this is from the score of Dead Poets Society. Now, I'm going to attempt to say this guy's name. I think he is French. His name is Maurice Jarry, I believe. They only released, I think, 4 tracks from this soundtrack. It was paired up with Year of Living Dangerously. So it's 4 tracks of that and then 4 tracks of that one, I think. So this is one of those. I have played one before. I played Keating's Triumph. I played that one maybe twice. So this is not Keating's Triumph. This is To the Cave, which is where they met up and secretly read their poetry. So this is Maurice Jarry, To the Cave. was To the Cave from Dead Poets Society soundtrack. So next week we'll have a different movie, different tracks. I'll have to think about it. There's a bunch of movies I can do. We'll come up with something interesting. So that is us done for the week. Like I said, my big news was I finished the writing, but I'm putting that on pause for a bit, and then I'm going to come back to it. And then I get to read the entire thing all the way through and go, okay, what can we tweak? What horrendous mistakes have you made because you didn't pay attention in typing class? Maybe. So that's something to look forward to. But in the meantime, yeah, I'm getting back into the little film project that me and my friend are working on, which is coming out at Halloween. Very appropriate. It's going to be an interesting film. So we've got a bit more of that filming to do. So I'm just at the moment processing some of the stuff we've already shot to work out what we haven't. And then we get to go through and film that, which will be fun, and then edit it and then show it to everyone else, which I'm sure everyone's looking forward to. So as we always do, we finish with a joke. And again, there's not a lot of really good jokes about typing out there, because I thought that's the best one. There'll be some great jokes about typing. There's some terrible jokes about it. They're not even funny. It's like, how is that even a joke? You're just stating a fact. Like complaining. So, it's not an alphabetical order. That's just the level of thing they thought was funny. I did find one, however, that I felt was very, very good. This one is exceptional. It's very puntastic. So whoever invented the typewriter must have invented a prototype writer. So, I mean, that's just brilliant. How do people come up with stuff like that? That's just fantastic. I admire the way that person's brain worked. So that is me done for the week. We had no problems today, so that's good. I get to share all the music with you, and like I said, we'll think of something else. We'll come back next week and we'll do another movie tribute, a little bit of banter, and three more stories for you. So that's thank you very much for hanging out with me for another half an hour on your Monday morning, or if you're listening to this in a podcast, whenever you're listening to it. Again, thank you very much for listening. We will catch up with you in a week's time. Look after yourselves, and we'll see you then. Catch you later.